Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We're giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I come your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m. on the radio broadcast, where we also stream the broadcast live at that time. The podcasts are available at richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, as well as SoundCloud and iTunes. And we hope that you will also click on the link to our guests' websites so that you can continue your evolutionary process, as I like to put it, so that you can move forward in this world. I can guarantee you that there is one thing that no one else will do for you, and that is carry on your evolutionary process. They've got their own to deal with. There you go. So we hope that you will check out all of that good stuff. We are going to be talking today with a very special guest. We're going to be talking about the 12 steps, but not the 12 steps that you might think, although they seem to be sort of kind of similar, which is very interesting. We're going to be talking with the author of the 12 steps to my favorites, joy and happiness. And by the way, just remember, I bring this up almost every time we talk about the word happiness, that our preamble does give us life and liberty, but it doesn't give us happiness. We only get to pursue it, so keep that in mind. The subtitle here is Finding the Kingdom of God That Lies Within, and we're going to talk about that with David Peters. Thank you so much for joining us on the program, David.
It is my pleasure.
It's very interesting.
Thank you for asking.
You're very welcome. It's very interesting how you've put together these 12 steps, and we'll kind of step through each one of these as we move forward. Obviously, the first is having to do with the fact that, I think that's going to be summed up, we're powerless. We have no control, in a manner of speaking. That's kind of the first step, I think, of some of the 12-step programs and their 12 steps. Is that not?
It is. And the entire 12 steps are actually based on the 12-step programs themselves. That's where I learned them from, and I've adjusted them because people have a more difficult time with actually some of the steps required when a person has injured so many others with alcoholism, drug addiction, et cetera, et cetera.
And of course, you're also within these... step two having to do with the fact that, okay, step one, we're powerless. Step two is there is a greater power. And that greater power can go by a lot of different names for a lot of different people, but it's still the same power. But would you acknowledge that that power is not outside ourselves? And again, going back to step one, that we are powerless. But that power that we want to tap into is within each one of us. We can tap into that, if you will, right?
That is correct. I believe everything is a part of that power. The way I have seen it expressed, that makes sense to me. I consider that the power is the ocean. Each of us is a wavelet on that ocean. We're not the whole ocean, but we are part of it.
Mm. Now, you, like my father, are in your 80s.
That's correct. I'm 84.
And my dad's 87. And I know that we're always, I know my dad too, although my dad did share with me one aspect of his personal, shall we say, spiritual life, and that is that it's a very private thing to him, and so he didn't really share anything with me about it. So I'm not going to be divulging anything because I don't know anything, but I know that he has one. But that's one of those funny things that I always found fascinating when it came to conversations, especially with the people that I worked with back in the 80s and 90s at a Christian radio station back in Phoenix. They always talked to us about how this was a personal relationship, and then they would then begin to pass judgment, as they did on a number of occasions, that I wasn't ready to meet God and I wasn't saved. And I'm going, wait a minute, but you just told me this was personal between me and God, so how do you know? I mean, have you heard something? Have you read something somewhere? You know? But I think that that's very fair that we don't have to publicize it. I mean, I would have to say that if somebody were listening to the interviews I've done over the last 40 years, I probably could write an unauthorized biography, I guess it would be.
Biography, yeah.
And probably be pretty accurate, because I've tried to be rather truthful in some of the experiences that I've had in my life. Although they did say after my first divorce and only divorce, God willing, that I looked like a new man, like I'd been reincarnated into, you know, because I looked so different. So, okay, lives. But... You know, it's interesting. I've taken this tack, David, that, you know, there's 7.6 billion people on the planet right now.
I know.
And God knows everything about me. I mean, there's nothing hidden, right, from God.
Correct. That
so correct. What difference does it make if those 7.6 billion people know? And besides, how many of them do you really think care? They're too busy just living their lives and in some cases just barely surviving. You know,
I think you would be surprised about how many people deep inside care. They may not express it, they may not show it, and they don't even know how to show it. But inside is a wonder. What's it all about? Why am I here? What's life? Why life?
Mm-hmm.
And someplace along the line, usually in the 40s and the 50s, it begins to become more prominent, and you think, by this time you've established a life. If you have a family, the children are old enough to where they're running around, perhaps out of the home even, you know, 50, 55 years old. And you start saying, why? Why am I here? And I think everybody goes through that the cycle as they age about why am I here? Because I know everybody that I talk with, and if I ask them if they thought about it when they up around the 50s, 60s, 70s, they say, oh, yeah. Yeah, I've often thought of that. So I think we'd be surprised about how many people care. Out of the 7.6 billion, there's probably approximately half or so are old enough to where they can begin to wonder, what's life about?
You know, your third step, which this, it actually, it goes, we continue to examine our lives and purpose and spiritual solutions by surrendering to God. Now, oh, I beg your pardon. I read the wrong one. I want to go to three. I'm not even going to tell you what the number was there. We'll get to that one. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand God. Now, I came up with this wonderful little analogy, and it kind of applies to this, and then I want you to expound on this. I've often heard people, you know, they will utter that I want to do God's will. That's all I want to do. I just want to turn, you know, I'm turning my life over to God, and I'm whatever the philosophy they've adopted in their lives. And I imagine this individual walking in this giant, beautiful meadow, green meadow, and they're walking forward, and they have their hands cupped in front of them, and in their hands, they're holding their will. Okay, if you could extract your will from your body, as it were, they're holding their will, and I just want to do God's will, I just want to do God's will. And then they toss it in the air. God is watching, and God catches their will in these giant hands, tears streaming down God's face, if I may anthropomorphize, I forget it. Anyway, God is tearing up, and at the same time compressing that individual's will into about the size of a baseball. And then God hurls that baseball size will back at that person, smacking him right smack dab in the forehead, and says to them, then do something with the life I gave you. You are not a puppet on a string being manipulated by forces you do not understand. How do you juxtapose that aspect of, say, taking personal responsibility for our lives and where we have found ourselves, as well as making that decision, again, to turn our will and our lives over to God, with number one, which is we're powerless. Now we're in step three, how do we juxtapose that?
Actually, it's fairly straightforward in my thinking, at least. We're powerless. To discover that we're powerless is probably the key. Step one, it's extremely difficult to accept the fact that I don't control my life. And because things happen to us, and we think that we are running the show, until, quite frankly, that you arrive at a point and you say, "I'm stuck. I think that I'm running the show, but why am I unhappy? Why can't I find joy? What is going on? I am powerless to find joy. I can drown myself. I can drown myself in drugs and alcohol." Television, all kinds of stuff, football, anything like that. You can drown yourself so that you keep ignoring that, but it keeps coming back in the back of your mind. So eventually, you'll have to make a choice. What will you do? Will you let yourself go on like this for the rest of your life and actually live a fairly miserable life? Nothing great about it, or perhaps there is another way. And the other way is to say, okay, I'm going to try to find a way to put myself into the care of God. I don't express it as doing the will of God, as putting myself into the trust of God. If I trust God, things will work out, which is slightly different, but that is my personal approach. It isn't the will of God, because God's will, in my way of thinking, is very, very simple. God's will is to have you enjoy God, to be one with God. It doesn't matter what you do, but to be one with God, because then you will do the right things. That's automatic.
Okay.
That makes sense?
It does. It does indeed. I'm curious as to when you, and put it in this interesting context, when did you meet God for the first time?
I was 4 years old. And my parents moved out to a farming area. They only had 5 acres sitting on a farm, and Dad was working at a college, Oberlin College, if you've heard of that, in Ohio. And he wanted to be able to sustain himself. This was Depression time, in 1936, 1937, and they'd already lost a farm that they had once upon a time bought. And so they were back living in town when I was born. And so when we moved out to this 5 acres, I had no friends. There was nobody my age anywhere close by, within a couple miles. So what I used to do was to just walk the fields. And even in the wintertime, go out in the snow and just absolutely love it. Now, during that time, of course, I didn't have friends. So I had this imaginary friend. And because both my parents were quite spiritual, that was just part of my life as a matter of course. I didn't even think about it. And so that friend became Jesus. And that was the beginning of a lifelong, 80-year-long a relationship with God that changed over the years from a childhood just somebody that I could talk to and who would talk to me. And that just continued up through my teenage years when I had a struggle with God at that point, into my college years, into my married life. And from that point on, I've always had a relationship with God. God has always been present to me, right here, right now.
Hmm. Now, you say you've been on, I was reading here where it says that you have been on a spiritual journey, and that you have spent, for example, when I was 17, I began what I called my search. And I shared that with some people at this station, and they said, well, once you find Jesus, your search is over. And there was something inside me that knew that wasn't true. And I said to them, I says, no, that once I find Jesus, my search has just begun.
Correct. You know.
Tell me about your search and some of the things that have happened to you. Refer to, by the way, I love the word you refer to in here as amazing coincidences. I repronounce that. Kind of like the British repronounce laboratory as laboratory. Coincidences. There are events in our lives that coincide, or you could use the word synchronicity too. But talk to us about those kinds of things that have happened on your search.
Because I've always trusted God in my life, I've always said, okay, God, what seems to be the right way to move? And it was always gentle hints, outside things that I would recognize, but it was always something that said, go this way. And I would be amazed, absolutely astounded at what would happen. For instance, I was in college, and I had received a scholarship offer to Ohio State to go into radio astronomy, which was a fascinating, just burgeoning field at that point, 1959. It was just getting started. And I had found it fascinating. But I was 25 years old. And I took a job offer down, or a opportunity to go to New York City for an interview with a company, and I spent the weekend in the city, absolutely loved it. And I said to myself, I'm 25. And I said to God, what now? By the time that I get a PhD, I'll be 30, 32 years old, and just getting started in life. And that seems like a third of my life is gone, at least. And something said to me, accept this job offer. I called him on the phone, and I accepted it. A few weeks later, I was talking at a conference. I was in school. The college, Dayton University, ran this conference in a conjunction with Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. And I was talking with a vendor. He asked me what I'm going to do, and he said, I'm going to work for this company, Hazeltine Corporation. And he said, oh, did you know that they had a television research organization that was the that founded television? And I said, no, I didn't know that. And television was my second love. I had spent a good part of my time going through college, earning money, repairing TV sets, just doing it, you know, the swapping of tubes primarily. That was the days when you had vacuum tubes.
Oh yeah, I remember.
So I called the company, I asked about it, and they said, nah, you have to be at least 15 years experience. You have to have all kinds of things. It's a very tiny part. There's only 15 people who work there. And there's just no way. I said to myself, okay, that's all right. I went to work there, and the very first day, they said to me, didn't you ask about the opportunity at the television research group? And I said, yes. They said, well, last Friday, the Friday before I first went, they came to us and asked for a young engineer who would be willing to work with them to learn the ropes from the bottom up. Would you like that? So I jumped at it. That's what I'm talking about, synchronicity. I spent 10 years working for the founders of television. My boss had 120 patents, in including the NTSC color system that everybody uses today here in the States. And that was the start of my professional career. Was that given by God? I think it was. And so that's, you know, that's just one of the opportunities that can happen if you let yourself go with God.
You consider that to be what they say in sports, being in the zone?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very, very much so.
What a great feeling that is, isn't it?
It sure is.
And it doesn't matter what you're doing, and sometimes it may not be pursuing, let's say, your life's purpose, as we talk about a lot on this program. Sometimes it just may be doing a particular task around the house or on the job or anywhere else for that matter. And it's just, it truly is quite an awesome experience, to say the very least. And the outcome or the results are pretty profound. Number four in the 12 steps to joy and happiness we made a fearful examination, examination of what was preventing us from surrendering our lives over to the care of God as we understand God. And that's real important, because a lot of times, you know, we can take a look at, I guess the best example is this. You have a family that goes on a vacation, they go to Disneyland. And I remember when I went to Disneyland with my family, and someone would say to you, "Hey, how was your trip to Disneyland?" And you'd say, "Oh, it was fantastic." Well, you're only telling half the truth, because it wasn't all fantastic. There are always those little things that pop up that you didn't expect, but, you know, you had to deal with them. Oh, you know, we got a flat tire, and somebody threw up in a car, and this and that and the other thing. You know, but, you know, of course, you remember the good things. Well, we all have our, shall we say, light side, and then we have our dark side, that shadow side. And I guess that's why you need to look at your life from a fearless perspective, more of the observer, right?
That's correct. And it's really a challenge, because most of the time you bury this stuff down and you pretend you don't have these problems. But when you step back from yourself and you just observe yourself for a while, you begin to see, I do that, didn't realize it. And that's the things you have to begin to understand, because when you surrender yourself to God, it isn't just something that you say the words and it's all done. It's a moment by moment step forward of your naked self. Who are you deep inside you? And quite frankly, the rest of your life, you spend doing that. I have this shadow back here that is sitting there, and what am I going to do with that shadow? And I have to bring it up to the light, to where it can be seen without a shadow. It's plain and simple, and there's always more.
Yeah. I've often found, too, that you don't want to do this at nighttime. I found that I used this example once, that when you start to have to deal with the challenges of day-to-day life, for example, you know, you're worried about your bank account, or you're worried about what's going on at work and that you're afraid you might be let go, or you're worried about whatever it is you're worried about. Don't do it at night, because at night there are no boundaries, okay? The darkness goes on forever, and so do the problems. And so if you can just set them aside and say, "I'm going to wait until the sun comes up, you know, and then I will deal with them." And I will tell you that I've actually thought about that and turned the lights on in the room. It's still nighttime. It still feels the same. You need, I don't know, is there something about the sunlight that makes a difference?
Yes. Yeah. And you know, despite all the things that I have, I own my own company, and there are times when you worry. There are times when you say, "How am I going to get through this?" You know, whatever this happens to be, it doesn't matter. And I find myself up at night. Well, I find if I think about the problem, it's deadening, it's deadly. So I use a mantra at that point. God have mercy on me, or something of that nature. And I just walk around saying that until I can feel myself let go and just plain relax, and I can go back to bed and back to sleep. So it's so important that when you're doing this, you're doing it in the light. And it can be the physical light, as you mentioned, Richard, about the fact that the sunshine really is the breath of God in our life.
Yeah. You also talk in step 5 about admitting to God, ourselves, and another person the nature of our fears, resentments, worries, anxieties, and grievances. And again, this goes back to the 6.5 billion people. Everybody's got stuff. Now, everybody's story is a little different, as we've talked about on this program. Everybody's story is different. Yours is different from mine. It's different from my dad's. It's different from my mother's.
Yep.
But we all go through the same stuff. We're all dealing with the fears and the anxieties and the grievances and the frustrations and the worries. Does that seem to help to acknowledge that we're, even though we may not be sharing it with other people, that at least we can sit there going, okay, I'm not really alone because David is going through the same stuff. You know, he's facing the same emotions that I'm facing. The story's different, but the emotions are the same.
It's important. I think the first thing you have to do is to face ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And it really helps to be able to tell another human being problems and the things that are hurting us. Because once you do that, it's an amazing thing that happens about taking the weight off your shoulders and sharing that weight. And it seems like 90% of the weight is gone. And it's one of these things. I was in the 12-step movements themselves, working with drug addicts and alcoholics and people of that nature for about 20 years. I've started groups all over the place trying to do that. And I listened to them, and I encourage them to talk, because only when they start talking about their problems, you can just see the pain going out of their body. And we ourselves pretend that, hey, everything's okay. But if you have somebody you can be who you are in truth with, and it can be a therapist, it can be a close personal friend, it can be all kinds of things along that, you know, along that line, but somebody you can be your true self, which is very hard to do.
Yeah. I know, too, there's a wonderful biblical passage speaking of being perfect, even as your Father in heaven is perfect. And I used to question, well, what does that mean? You know, how do you do that? What's the process? And does it make me a good person when I do that? And I got to thinking about that. Well, wait a minute. As your Father in heaven is perfect. Well, wait a minute. God isn't good or bad or right or wrong or left or right. As it says, I believe it's in the Psalms, I am that I am. So to be perfect is just to be.
To be?
Just what you said, to be your true self.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We think that God is perfect, but if I believe that when Jesus came, Jesus turned down kingship.
Yeah.
He walked away from it. He was crucified because he wouldn't accept kingship. He wouldn't be the leader, so therefore we have to get rid of him. And unfortunately, too many of the Christian religions have taken Jesus and put him up on the kingship chair, even though that Jesus didn't want that.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what they've done, the top down.
Yeah.
And Jesus spoke from the bottom up. He was the one who comforted the sinner. He was the one that was gentle with the people who were hurting. And so if we recognize in the cosmology of the universe. As you know, within my book, I talk about quantum physics and I talk about other things. That if you look at what the universe is, it is an evolutionary changing process of pain. When you think of it from the broad aspect, what is the sun? It's H-bombs going off continuously inside. Well, that's, and it is only by that nature is there changes going on. So pain, God is closest to us, I believe, in the midst of pain and suffering and times and in life when you almost despair. It is in those times where you'll find that God's gentleness accepting you and me and finding out, okay, God, this is who I am. This is who I really am. I can let go. Mm. And that's what the step five is all about.
And then we go to six, which is we're asking you now, you folks, the way I read this the first time, I thought, well, then we should stop there. This sounds like a good place to stop, where we ask God to remove these barriers to full and rich life, one filled with joy and happiness. End of story. The end. We live happily ever after.
Not exactly.
No. Okay. Because all we're doing there is we're asking.
Right.
Okay.
What do you do after you ask?
Yeah.
And that's the rest of the steps.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna continue on with the rest of the steps, as they say. I'm not even going to quote that infamous phrase of one wonderful journalist of days gone by. We're going to continue talking with David Peters. He is the author of The 12 Steps to Joy and Happiness here on the program. Basically, finding the kingdom of God that lies within. Here on Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, as we take it step by step, one at a time, through all 12 of these wonderful steps called the 12 Steps to Joy. To Joy and Happiness, and we're trying to find the kingdom within. You know, David, I've done a lot of reading over my years, and it's funny when I start sharing some of the things that I've read and so forth. There are those who will respond, "Wow, you're really well read." And I think, well, maybe not so, because I haven't really read a lot of the classics. I haven't read a lot of the Greek philosophy books. And I finally finished Stranger in a Strange Land. It took me several years to. I have a hard copy of it, if you will, but I listened to it on Audible, unabridged version. Thank you very much. Loved the story because of its intrigue, but I was so saddened by the end. I don't know if you've read it or not.
I have.
You have? And I'm thinking, no, you can't do that to that guy. And I'm not going to spoil it for anybody who hasn't read it yet. I'm now working my way through, and I'm only through the first few pages. Again, Audible, unabridged, thank you very much, of Ulysses, supposedly the day in the life of Dublin, Ireland. You know, and I'm working my way through that, slowly but surely. And yet I remember you made an interesting comment in the last segment dealing with step five, the deification or the kinging of the crowning, if you will, of Jesus, putting him up on that pedestal or in that king's seat. There was a five book series that I read many years ago, took a course on it at a metaphysical church. It's called The Life and Teachings of the Masters of the Far East. You may be familiar with it.
I am.
And in it, it talks about an experience that the group, including Spalding, who is the author of the book, had in a cave. You recall this story?
Yeah.
And they meet up with both Pontius Pilate as well as Jesus. And I'm reading the words of Jesus as he's expounding. And I was almost brought to tears because of the frustration in his voice at the fact that man has done what you just expounded on in the latter part of the last segment of our program, that he never intended that, and that it makes it so difficult for him to communicate and relate to man, because man's put him up on this pedestal. They put him in this chair. They put this crown on him, and and they've deified him, and it's he never intended. He wanted to be down there with us. That was the whole intent. That was the whole purpose.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow.
That was one of the biggest mistakes that Christianity made in the year 312.
Yeah.
When they became the Roman Empire, personified, and suddenly there was no way you could say that everybody is the same, because 80% of the people were slaves.
Yeah.
That's what made the empire. And so they had to revert back to the top-down model to make that work.
Wow. It, like I said, it was just so profound to me. And I know I've got that copy of books floating around somewhere. I highlighted that thing like you would not believe, because it so spoke to me.
Yeah.
As many other passages from the Bible, in terms of the illogic that I found and this was because of the fact that I worked at that radio station. I don't know, maybe the radio station job was not just about broadcasting, but maybe it was sort of a pseudo seminary for me.
you know,
I don't know.
Yep. That's what it sounds like.
But I remember especially reading. There was a beautiful passage, and this was brought to my attention by an author by the name of John Noe, who wrote a book called The Apocalypse Conspiracy, sort of speaking to the general consensus of what you and I were talking about and what you mentioned earlier. And I didn't want to be telling people, oh, well, John Noe in his book said this, because now that's secondhand. I wanted to make sure that it was primary source information that I was learning. So I pulled out my Bibles. I have many different versions, and I pulled out my Strong's Concordance. And the first thing that I had to do, and of course I share this with people, is, okay, you have to take, for the sake of argument, we have to accept that the books that we have in front of us, they're primary source books. We have to accept the information that's contained in them. Got to start somewhere, right?
Right.
So I think it was one of Paul's letters where he's making reference, this is referred to as the rapture passage, where it says, and they are caught up to meet him in the air in the clouds of glory. Though a word that he was looking up, John was looking up, was the word air. They're caught up to meet him in the air in the clouds of glory. Now, that's interpreted quite literally, that our physical bodies are going to rise up. Well,
yeah, I know.
You go to the Strong's Concordance, and what you find is that passage there, and you find that there are two definitions in the New Testament for that word. One is the atmosphere. You see the clouds floating through, planes flying by, and so forth, right? And then
right.
The other is associated with this. God breathed the breath of life into the nostrils of Adam. It's the second definition that's used in that passage. And what it said to John and what it said to me was that this whole life that we are seeking, this internal, this life, it is all internal. There is no external about it. And
right.
It changed, and for him, as well as for me, it changed everything. It literally changed everything. And of course, he went on to talk about so much more in the book. It was one of the very first books that I actually read cover to cover, because it was so intriguing what he was saying. But I've always been asking those questions, like David, one of the gifts that Jesus gave us, in addition to many others, according to the writings of the New Testament, and his apostles were questioning him about, turning water into wine and doing all of these other things they saw him do, right? Hey, can we do those things? And he says, you betcha, but you're going to do greater works than these. Well, one of the gifts one of the things that he did was he raised Lazarus from the dead. But later on in one of the epistles, it says that it is appointed for every man once to die and then the judgment. So what's the deal with Lazarus? Did he break the rule? Was he an exception to the rule? How is that even possible? Because as far as I know, there are no exceptions to the rule when it comes to God. So these are the kinds of thinking. This is kind of the thinking that goes on in my head, during this time. Yeah. And of course, I also take a look at it and I go, okay, but just remember, That's you. That's for you. That's not for anybody else, okay? If you want to ponder that, go right ahead. But you do not undermine anybody else's faith, their philosophy, you know, by bashing them over the head with, look what I found. They have to find it for themselves.
Yes. Everybody's path is different. There is no two people ever take the same path to God. God is different for each person.
Yeah. It looks like step seven sort of ties into step five, that we acknowledge both the light and the dark elements of our nature as to who we are in the deeper reality of our being. Is that something, how is that different from five?
The five is saying, this is what I see right now that I'm doing. Seven is the next step of going inside of ourselves and saying, oh, I did not realize that all these things that I have, I have to change, not just, yeah, I've done it in the past, but I have to stop doing it in the future. So this is, it is the shadow being that we have. And the shadow being has two facets to it. It is dark and it is light. And if we recognize these as being complementary to one another, that the dark can be the light and the light can be the dark. Our strengths can be our greatest weaknesses, and our greatest weaknesses can be our greatest strength at the same time. And it is these things, once you begin to recognize who you are within you, then you can begin to acknowledge this and bring it all up to the light. It does not have to remain dark.
Now, that's interesting, too, because I know a lot of people, as we've talked, they have a problem with the dark, and they only want to be in the light. But, you know, one of the things, and I'm curious about your thoughts on this, one of the things that kind of struck me in reference to light and dark and so forth is that there's only darkness. And it's more a shadow. It's only because the light is, from my perspective, it's being blocked. It's not like there's this space where there's just utter darkness. To me, it's more along the lines of somehow you move behind a wall and you're now separated from the light. But the light is still there and it's still hitting the wall and every area above and below and to the left and to the right. But as long as you stand behind the wall, you're in shadow as opposed to deepest, darkest darkness, like the far side of the moon. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. And that's how it is, because the shadows that we have, God created us with these shadows. This is not something that is ungodlike. It is, it is both our strengths and our weaknesses. And if, you know, a great leader can be somebody who, like Martin Luther King or like President Trump. They have much the same strengths, but applied very, very differently.
Mm-hmm.
And so that we're given strengths, and what do we do with them? And that's why we have to recognize Carl Jung talked about the shadows that we have within us. And he's the one that talked about the dark shadows and the light, the light shadows, in fact, they call them. And so we have to recognize that they're counterbalanced with one another. It's who we are. These don't go away. We always have them. But what do we do with them?
David Peters, I thank you so much for joining us here on the program. And I encourage you that if you should ever find yourself out here on the central coast of California in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. This, to me, this isn't about addiction. I mean, most of the 12-step programs, you know, it's about addiction, whether it's alcoholics or narcotics, you know, drug or a relationship addiction or any of those kinds of things. This is, I suppose, in one sense, would you say maybe it's about becoming addicted to one's life? And in this case, you could transform your life in this process of these 12 steps.
Yes. That is the key to all of this, is that the 12 steps is a process. It it's not something that you go through once.
Yeah.
It's a process of your life, mm-hmm. and it means recycling back through. That's what they learn in the actual 12-step program. It's redoing the steps. I won't say daily, but it's certainly taking a look every day about where you're at and where you want to go, and what can I do today to take that next step? Just today.
We're going to encourage our listeners to go to your website, which is davidlendonpeters.com, DAVIDLENDONPETERS. We'll be linked to that website, davidlendonpeters.com, and also encourage you to pick up a copy of the book, 12 Steps to Joy and Happiness, Finding the Kingdom of God. That lies within. And that, of course, is from the New Testament, Luke 17:21, if you want to look that up. And again, David, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And if I can ask you three quick questions before we wrap up, and I'm hoping that we've got enough juice to get us to those three questions. Then the first one is, who is David Peters?
Who is?
Correct.
That's an interesting question. I'm an engineer. I'm a husband of my wife, and I have been married 57 years. Mm. We have 7 children together. We had 4 girls, then we had 3 boys. And it's been a marvelous, marvelous life of joy and happiness through ups and downs, ins and outs, forward and backwards, and it's just been a wonderful time. I own my own company. In fact, I'm in the office as we speak, even though I'm 84. I still go in every day for 3 to 4 hours, and we do computer graphics for flight simulation. I've got 18 patents. I've got a significant amount of professional followers and people that I've worked with for over 60 years now. Mm. And so it's been a joyful life. That's who I am.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now, through the book, The 12 Steps to Joy and Happiness?
I became aware a few years ago, that I've lived an unusual life of being conscious of the presence of God in my life the whole time. And I just decided I had to pass that on. I also operate 2 spiritual groups. One meets tonight, another meets every Monday night. And it is through these groups that I share. I'm the so-called leader, but in this kind of an operation, everybody is a leader. And it's just, I enjoy helping people to find joy and happiness that is not just empty, which almost every approach other than with God is empty. Mm-hmm. And so if they can find the truth in that, joy and happiness, it just sits there, no matter what happens. And I expect when I pass from this world, that will be part of my pathway, because God is there. I'm just walking into through the clouds, you might say, when that moment comes in my life.
And the final question, what is your life's purpose? What is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose, I look at it as to be a pathway for the voice of God in among the people that I can touch, that I have touched. And that's the only purpose I can see within my life.
Hmm. Well, David Peterson, I thank you so much for joining us here on the program again. And I hope we get together. I hope we can get together again to talk more about this. And again, I thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Richard, very much.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal and Makushla.
And that's why it's that when you talk about a recognition of our deeper reality, we can come to terms that they're there. They're ours. And they're ours to work with, which leads into step eight. We take responsibility for our choices that we have made with these, particularly those that have created pain. And so that's a direct follow-on from step seven.
Well, I know that in the 80s and early 90s, that was a tough one, especially for Christians, because the devil was responsible for this, that, or the other thing. And I remember interviewing a woman. She was the wife of a very prominent Christian musician and artist.
Yeah.
And we were talking about her book and how she was working her way through, or had worked her way through, the 12 steps because she had a problem with alcohol.
Okay.
Never once in the interview did she ever mention the devil. Okay? And I found
wise
that,
woman.
And I found that fascinating, and I almost wanted to ask her about that, why she didn't, and I decided not to, because what she was doing was she was taking full responsibility for her life.
Yes.
You remember Flip Wilson used to spout off by saying, "The devil made me do it." And it's like, well, wait a minute. Either, you know, they use this analogy that you're either you're pregnant or you're not. You're not sorta. You're not half pregnant.
Right.
So either you're 100% responsible or you're not responsible at all. And if you're not responsible at all, then we got other questions we need to ask you. But that's one of the hardest things, I think, too, because we always. And we see this today, you know, you use the examples, counselor, you opened the door to this, so I'm going to continue on with it a little bit. But again, I don't want to get overly political, but what I've noticed is that our present, current president doesn't want to take responsibility for anything. I mean, I've never heard him take responsibility unless things are good. If things go bad, it's not his fault, it's everybody else's but his. And again, I'm not being political here. You hear it in the news. You see it
in
the.
It's
there. So I'm not being mean or cruel or what have you. I'm stating the facts, and no, it's not fake news. So that's one of the things that can really frustrate folks in their own personal lives when somebody else is blaming circumstance or other individuals or whatever the case might be for their current situation, whatever it might be. I had a situation just recently, David. And by the way, David Peters is my guest. He's the author of The Joy of the 12 Steps to Joy and Happiness. I had a situation a few weeks ago. I was traveling down a street in my car, thought I had slid over just enough to the left to avoid what I saw was a door of a parked car that looked like it was slightly ajar. You know, someone was in there and so forth. Thought I would, because I've passed cars before with doors open and not a problem. Took my side view mirror, popped the mirror out, didn't take the mirror off, but popped the mirror itself out of the socket. And I immediately pulled over and I went back and made sure that the gentleman was okay. He was fine and I was fine. And where's my mirror? Oh, that's over here in front of my car. And there it was. And it cost me $95. I have a $100 deductible, so, you know, it didn't matter. But was that my fault or was that his? Well, I chose, this is how far back I'll take this. I chose to go down that road at that time. And in spite of the fact that I thought I had given enough room, maybe he pushed the door open a little. I don't know. But the reality is that I chose to be there at that time. So, hey, I'm responsible.
Yeah. And to accept that responsibility for some people is extremely challenging. And on the other hand, you got the people that I don't know how many times I bump somebody accidentally, and they'll say, "I'm sorry."
Yeah.
What are you sorry about? You know, it's my fault.
Yeah. But do you think that there are those also who tend to take responsibility for things they didn't do, like that, where this person apologized to you, and yet you know full well you bumped into him?
Yes. And I try to say something about that, because I don't want them to accept responsibility for something that I did. It is my thing that I have to say who it is.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Let's move on now. We've talked about, of course, step eight as far as that is concerned, taking responsibility. Yeah. We also commit. I like this. I really like step nine. We commit to a life of being of healing and transformation. Through our thoughts, words, and actions, we will demonstrate who we are in truth. I like the word transformation. I was talking on a program not too long ago and talking about how, you know, we want to change our lives. And the guest said, well, okay, but I would change that word from change to transform, because to change, it could be changed back. Whereas if you transform, I guess there's more permanence in that word.
That's the purpose of the word. It's an evolutionary step that we take, and evolution occurs within a lifetime. It is your evolutionary step of putting yourself into the light. And when you do that, that's a transformation. That's a change about who you are, from somebody who is in shadow to somebody that is in bright light. And that is a life of healing others. That's the thing. It doesn't take a lot. It doesn't take any outward action. It's a thing that shines forth from your inside that makes people feel good.
I like too about through our thoughts, words, and actions. One of the aspects of my book Choices has to do with, you know, matching your words, matching your thoughts, and matching your actions, matching your associations to the choices that you have made. And if we have chosen this path, this spiritual path of joy and happiness through these 12 steps that you have very well elucidated on, then there are some changes that we have to make to transform our lives. And as you say, it takes a lifetime, but it can literally begin today, can't it? You don't have to put it off.
It begins every day.
Yeah.
Every day you're starting over. And that's a thing that I get up in the morning. That's the first thing that I say to God. I say, okay, God, this is a new day. Thank you very much. Help me to be the beam of light in the world today that I was meant to be.
So in step 10, we take a look at continuing to examine our lives and to pursue a spiritual solution by surrendering to God. And of course, we're going to kind of leave it right there. But David Peters, I thank you so much for joining us here on the program. And I encourage you that if you should ever find yourself out here on the central coast of California in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. This, to me, this isn't about addiction. I mean, most of the 12-step programs, you know, it's about addiction, whether it's alcoholics or narcotics, you know, drug or a relationship addiction or any of those kinds of things. This is, I suppose, in one sense, would you say maybe it's about becoming addicted to one's life? And in this case, you could transform your life in this process of these 12 steps.
Yes, that is the key to all of this, is that the 12 steps is a process. It's not something that you go through once.
Yeah.
It's a process of your life, and it means recycling back through. That's what they learn in the actual 12-step program. It's redoing the steps, I won't say daily, but it's certainly taking a look every day about where you're at and where you want to go. And what can I do today to take that next step? Just today. Just today.
We're going to encourage our listeners to go to your website, which is David LendonPeters.com, DavidLendonPeters. We'll be linked to that website, DavidLendonPeters.com, and also encourage you to pick up a copy of the book, 12 Steps to Joy and Happiness, Finding the Kingdom of God that lies within. And that, of course, is from the New Testament, Luke 17:21, if you want to look that up. And again, David, I want to thank you so much for joining us. And if I can ask you three quick questions before we wrap up, and I'm hoping that we've got enough juice to get us to those three questions. Then the first one is, who is David Peters?
Who is?
Correct.
That's an interesting question. I'm an engineer. I'm a husband of, my wife and I have been married 57 years. Mm. We have 7 children together. We had 4 girls, then we had 3 boys. And it's been a marvelous, marvelous life of joy and happiness through ups and downs, ins and outs, forward and backwards. It's just been a wonderful time. I own my own company. In fact, I'm in the office as we speak, even though I'm 84. I still go in every day for 3 to 4 hours. And we do computer graphics for flight simulation. I've got 18 patents. I've got a significant amount of professional followers and people that I've worked with for over 60 years now. Mm. And so it's been a joyful life. That's who I am.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now, through the book, The 12 Steps to Joy and Happiness?
I became aware a few years ago, that I've lived an unusual life of being conscious of the presence of God in my life the whole time. And I just decided I had to pass that on. I also operate 2 spiritual groups. One meets tonight, another meets every Monday night. And it is through these groups that I share. I'm the so-called leader, but in this kind of an operation, everybody is a leader. And it's just, I enjoy helping people to find joy and happiness that is not just empty, which almost every approach other than with God is empty. Mm-hmm. And so if they can find the truth in that joy and happiness, it just sits there no matter what happens. And I expect when I pass from this world, that will be part of my pathway, because God is there. I'm just walking into the through the clouds, you might say, when that moment comes in my life.
And the final question, what is your life's purpose? What is your life's purpose?
My life's purpose, I look at it as to be a pathway for the voice of God in among the people that I can touch, that I have touched. And that's the only purpose I can see within my life.
Hmm. Well, David Peterson, I thank you so much for joining us here on the program again. And I hope we can get together again to talk more about this. And again, I thank you so much.
Okay, thank you, Richard, very much.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal and Makushla.